Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. And good morning to the woman who makes New Haven tick, Mayor Toni Harp. Mayor Harp is here in her studio for her regular Mayor Monday checkup on what she and we are up to in New Haven. You can join the conversation by posting a question on our New Haven Independent Facebook Live page. We up, Harry? We're up on Facebook? All right. And you can also call in at 203-872-7ELM, 203-872-7356. Today's program is made possible in part thanks to support from Birch and Moses PC and from Gateway Community College in downtown New Haven. Thanks, Gateway. Thanks, Bertram. Thanks, Mayor Harp, for making time. I know she's been a little busy these days. Thanks for coming on into the studio.
It's great to be here.
So before we went on the air, you told me some big news, the big news in the morning, which is that you met in person. The group that's playing the music you're listening to right now, that you hear every week, every day on Dateline New Haven, the Afro-Semitic Experience, my favorite local band. And so, Mayor Harp, maybe you can give us the deets here. When did you meet them? How? And what happened at this fateful encounter?
Sure. I met them yesterday about 1 o'clock at the Tower.
P.M.
1 p.m.
Because okay. They are known to be out at 1 a.m., just so you know.
Okay. All right. And, you know, and they played the theme song.
Eliyahu Hanavi.
Yeah. They did. They played it. You know, they played it.
They played our song.
They played our song. And so that I would know who they were. And it sounds so great in person. Sounds good, too, you know, the recording, but it really sounds wonderful when you're 5 feet away. You know?
And when they made this recording decades ago, they did not have the trumpet player, the young woman, who's not so young, I guess, anymore. Just to us, she's young. The woman, did you know it was the trumpet player who was really way out?
Oh, okay. You know, honestly, I don't think she was there.
She's a free jazz person. She's quite remarkable.
Oh, okay. Well, it was great to see them and to hear them.
Did you introduce yourself?
Well, they introduced themselves.
Oh, okay. They are great live.
They are.
I saw a star at Jacob Church recently for Christian Community Action. They had the place. They had the places up in the rafters. It was great. Now, you actually just mentioned an event that I was really sad to miss, but I was happy to be at a wedding while it was taking place elsewhere. Tower 1 Tower East, which is the big tower you notice as you're going near the, getting onto I-95, at what's left the last 2 inches of the Route 34 connector there in downtown, right on the other side of the Knights of Columbus. 50 years ago, that tower went up, and it was the result of a vision of Jim Flock and some others in the Jewish community that senior housing should not be warehoused housing. It should be more like a college dorm. Mm-hmm. And it's a not-for-profit, and they've been successful, and it's not just Jewish people who live there, but it is run by the Jewish community through a nonprofit, and it does have a synagogue there. And it's been successful. It's a great place. I know people love to get in there to live.
There was one person who'd been there for 35 years, one lady.
Oh, yeah?
Who'd been there for 35 years.
And people are living longer there. We always go every year to the senior prom. So they have a prom every June.
Oh, okay.
Where people go on dates, and some of them have never been to their prom. Last year was some who had been in World War II, so they weren't at their prom. But others who have fallen in love at the towers, and they go to the prom together. People in their 80s, and now they're later and later. So it's like late 80s, 90s. I think the average age is up there in a pretty high 80s. And the young people love to dance with them. It's quite a place.
It really is a place. And there was a man there who'd been in World War II, and he was born in 1917.
Wow.
I mean, 1917, yeah. So he was 100 years old, and he was still alert and lively and spry. I don't know. I was like, they take good care of people.
And
there.
They have their dining hall,
yeah.
Where it's sort of like when we were in college, you know, who's going to sit with whom in the dining hall and that kind of stuff. They have a lot of activities there.
I think
it's a well-run place. I think it's, I mean, I go there for community meetings, mm-hmm. and it really seems like stuff's going on. It seems clean.
That's very
clean. And people are cared for. Actually, I know people who have relatives there, and I've been mm-hmm. up in the rooms, and I think it's a nice place, and it's right by downtown.
It's close to downtown, and when you are spry and you can actually enjoy downtown as well. You know, you can walk a block and a half, and you're almost on Chapel Street. So it's really close to downtown. You can enjoy all those amenities. One of the things that Andy Wolf did, and I was grateful because I went to speak to them, and I was telling them about our concerts on the Green, and And so many of them that were in the room at that particular point in time were in walkers, and they said, but we can't go, even though it's that close. And so we had a jazz concert series this year, Cool Breeze in the Park. And so for the last couple of those Cool Breezes in the Park, Andy Wolf arranged for a bus to get folks out, gave them really good seating so that they had a special reserve spot. And then they also had a special reserve spot at Opera Palooza as well. So, so we're trying to make sure that your age doesn't stand in the way of you enjoying the nice free things that we have in our parks and on our green.
And Andy Wolf is your culture and tourism chief.
Yes.
And he grew up in New Haven.
Yes, he did.
And he's not yet in the generation of the towers.
No.
But he is a senior citizen.
Yes.
Which is, defined downward these days because people are pretty active senior citizens. And he lives in the Taft downtown.
Right.
So mm-hmm. he enjoys that. You know, part of New Haven's renaissance has been not just young people who don't have kids who want to enjoy a kind of lively downtown, but also empty nesters.
Right.
And people who don't have kids at home anymore, just of that age, who are excited to be going to theater and galleries and restaurants and like living in the center of town. And
yeah, they're close to services too if they need them. So we have everything in New Haven.
So what was happening at this event, Mayor Hart? What was...
They were reflecting on their 50-year history. Mr. Vlock was there.
And Jim Vlock was one of the founders.
Yep. And Ms. Cantor was also there.
Linda Cantor?
Yep. And she gave me an award, not so much for me as for Richard C. Lee, who the collaboration between Jim Vlock and, I guess...
Then Mayor Lee.
So
you
sort
were accepting
of
on behalf of Mayor Lee, who did depart this earth about 12 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
13, 14, yeah.
So that was fun, and the Towers also gave the two of them, Linda Cantor and Jim Vlock, awards, and I believe I had to leave a little early, all of the executive directors. One of the things that was pointed out is that the executive directors, I think later they were called presidents, were there for a long time, so over 50 years they've only had three.
The before you became mayor, but near the end of Mayor DeStefano's term, there was some issue, and I'm sorry I forget the specifics, even though I wrote an article about it. This is embarrassing to admit. There was some kind of renewal they needed of a tax status. Do you remember what that did? That
sure,
all get taken
there,
care of?
It all,
thanks for remembering.
It all got taken care of. We have a housing payment in lieu of taxes that the state normally provides for subsidized housing, certain subsidized housing, and the Towers benefits from that. And it was out, one governor took it out of the budget. I can't remember which governor it was. And so the legislature had to put it back in. And so that was one of the things that we worked on, because if we hadn't done that, then the city would have to make a decision about whether or not they would remain at a reduced tax, property tax rate. And so it all got worked out.
Now, since they built the Towers, we've had this aging population and people being more active. I mean, there are people in my synagogue 90 years old who participate in services and are all with it. I mean, we see this in every facet of life. And the for-profit sector has grasped this opportunity with assisted living places, some of which are quite nice. My mm-hmm. late mother-in-law was at a good one. But this is a nonprofit one that has a community mission. So I'm really hoping they continue to succeed. You know, you have to be flexible. It's the next half century of how they're going to do it. One thing that cracked me up recently was there was whole debate about whether to do your building project in the Hill, which is right across the street, mostly 11.4 acres, where you're building on mostly vacant parking lots, mm-hmm. new apartments and stores. But there's a lot right next to the Towers. And there are a lot of hidden agendas. We don't have to get into that today. Delaying that project's approval. And there were a lot of reasons people were giving for why it had to be delayed that really didn't have to do with the real reason. And my favorite one is there's a lot right next to Tower 1, Tower East. And they said that the people who live in the Towers are very upset about something being built on this vacant lot and that it might even be doctor offices. And in the end, months later, after it was delayed, in fact, there was an endorsement by the organization for it. And what cracked me up about it was that a lot of people go to doctors who are 80 years old mm-hmm. and 90, and they would then be able to go right out their front door to a doctor on a vacant lot. I don't know that they were so scared that their doctors are going to be next to them, because they all take shuttles to Brantford and places like that to go to their doctor.
That is funny.
That's just a little 2 cents there. Okay. And to remind people that you're listening to Mayor Monday on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenfm.org. Frank Douglas writes in on Facebook Live, "Good morning, Mayor Harp, and hello, Paul Bass." Hello, Frank Douglas. Thank you so much for listening.
Hi, Frank.
David St. Hilaire commented. Let's see. He has a question here. It's not showing up here, Harry, but I got it on my phone. When will the mayor bring New Haven into... Okay, this is a targeted question. When will the mayor bring New Haven into compliance with federal law and end sanctuary city status?
We believe that we are in compliance with federal law. As a matter of fact, there's a separation between state government and federal government. And we believe that as a jurisdiction that is sanctioned by the state, that we're protected and can operate within that venue. And so we are in compliance. The real question is whether or not the federal government is in compliance by asking us to do things that are outside of those things we're chartered to do.
And that, just so our listeners, they probably know what we're talking about. New Haven is a sanctuary city, even though it's not a term of art, and that will be decided in the courts. We do not cooperate with certain requests by the federal government when we've released someone who's a nonviolent arrestee to hold them longer if they want to come pick them up. And we do not share that kind of information. And we do allow our churches to house people who are facing deportation. I guess what you were referring to is that New Haven, among many cities, is planning to challenge a Trump administration order that to get certain federal funding, it's a lot less than we were starting out having this conversation, mm-hmm. certain justice funding, they're going to require that you share that kind of information and agree to. And Attorney General Jennifer Sessions did publish that requirement, I believe, last week, or make that requirement. So you're saying that if they decide you're not in compliance, will you maintain the sanctuary city policy that we have?
Absolutely. And we'll sue.
All right. We'll sue. Okay. Bob does not call in today, but he did write in a question.
Mm-hmm.
Ask Mayor Harp, please, what her vision of the city is over the next 2 years if she is reelected.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think that we have worked really hard on is making our city safer, and we're going to continue doing that work. What my vision is that we go neighborhood by neighborhood looking at the crime statistics to sort of guide us, but then bringing all of our regulators into those neighborhoods and really beginning to address the broken glass syndrome that creates a lot of crime. And we'll likely start in the New Hallville neighborhood, and then we'll move on. But what we're going to be doing is looking at everything we have control over as a city to assure that we make sure that the landlords are good and decent landlords that keep up their property. And if they don't, then we're going to raise their level of concern in some ways. We're going to make sure that, again, you know, like everything the from health to public works to LCI, we're going to be going in and we're going to be cleaning up neighborhoods, neighborhood by neighborhood.
You said start in New Hallville. Is that with the $1 million burn grant, BYRNE, that we get from Justice Department? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, that is one of the things that will assist us.
That sounds
us.
Like the strategy of what I remember with that grant.
That's one of the things that will assist us. And a lot of those resources are going to community agencies in New Hallville. But it's also focusing our departments on neighborhoods, one neighborhood at a time. We do a lot of really great work, and our departments do a lot of great work, but people don't really often appreciate it or see it because it's all over the city. So we're going to focus so that when we leave a community, you will know that we have been there.
And I'm wondering, you know, we also have limited resources in the city, so we're supposed to inspect every apartment that's, I believe, more than two or three units in citywide that's rented out in a building. And you can't get to all of them all the time. So are you thinking maybe the LCI, Liberal City Initiative, really focuses inspections first in New Hallville? Not that they don't go anywhere else when there's an emergency, but is that kind of what you're thinking?
Well, yes, we expect them to do those kind of inspections. We're going to make sure that all of the landlords that are there that should have licenses have licenses. And we're just going to make sure that we do everything that we can to improve the quality of that neighborhood so that you can't say crime happens here because we've been negligent.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, you mentioned at Tower and Tower East that you saw someone who's 100 years old and still with it. There is a woman whom you served with on the Board of Alders who made it to 103.
Yeah.
And she made it to 103. She was in hospice at the end, but she was around.
Mm-hmm.
And she was an alder for 35 years, the longest alder serving in the history of New Haven. Her name was Lisa DeLauro. She's the mother of Rosa DeLauro, who's a U.S. rep. And I remember how proud she was of her daughter. That was sort of her life's mm-hmm. proudest achievement, being her mom. She died this weekend.
She did.
And it was sort of a passing. It was worth noting, not just because she's a human being and every human being is worth noting, but she played, I think, two important roles. But I'm going to say what you have to say about it. He did have a comment in today's independence story. You served with her. When Lucy DeLauro became an alder, she grew up in West Worcester Square, worked in a sweatshop, running a sewing machine. Her husband was very active in politics. She was too, even in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So she was born in 1913.
Wow.
So in the 30s, she was involved in the Democratic Club. And she wrote in the newsletter, I think it was called the Men's Club, about how women should be involved and let their voices heard. 1965, she becomes an alder woman. She wasn't the first, but there were hardly any. And she stays until 1990. I'm sorry, 65, 35, till 2000. And by the time you got on there, there had been a few more. And you were in another watershed year, 1987, when you were elected alder. You and three other women were newly elected that year, Elizabeth McCormick, Elaine Braffman, and Robin Krugman, and yourself. And that sort of upped the visibility of women. You were all women who came in with work that you were doing, and you were getting a lot of attention for you were doing at the time. What was the role that, if any, that Louisa DeLauro played in that when you got there? What did you see her role in the emergence of women as more of a political force in New Haven?
Well, first of all, I think she was a mentor to all of us who were on the board. She helped us understand what we needed to do if we were going to move an agenda item forward. We got to watch her as she stood on the floor and argued on behalf of things that were important to her community, but she also had a citywide point of view, and she was also a lot of fun, so that not only was she a hardworking politician on behalf of really all of New Haven, but she also knew how to have a good time. And so she made us feel more comfortable in that role, because it was a role that was new to all of us. And so in that regard, she kind of gave us permission to really enjoy being on the Board of Aldermen at the time, and to move things forward, because we watched her do it.
She and her daughter Rosa are invested in the quote first woman concept.
Mm-hmm.
When Hillary Clinton was running, that was a big deal for both of them. I know that Louisa showed Bill and Hillary on the neighborhood in Worcester Square, her neighborhood. When Geraldine Ferraro ran for vice president, the first female major party ticket, I remember they brought them to Worcester Square, and that's where they held that rally. And you were the first female mayor. I remember when you had your first major rally after your primary in 2013, it was in Worcester Square. Rosa was at that one. I don't remember if Louisa was at that one.
No, I don't believe that she was, but Rosa and I were there. And, you know, one of the things that Rosa always does is talk about the influence of her mother on her career. And you know, at the time, it had to be hard, because it's not that easy now for a woman to be in politics and to go up against men. It's not that easy. And oftentimes, you're treated differently than I would imagine a man would be treated. And so it still is really an issue. And I think until women have equal pay for equal work, until this country at the local level, but especially at the state and federal level, take into consideration the demands that are on a woman. And I've always said, make sure that women who are of the childbearing age have access to, once they have their children, to high quality child development services that women have not made it, because men always get their needs met. And, you know, our needs are secondary, and they still are to some extent, and our pay is still lower than men's pay in many respects. And so these are still very real issues that are alive today, and I think sometimes we forget about them. I even think sometimes some women forget about them. But the truth of the matter is that these are still things that need to be addressed. And that's why it's important that we hear Rosa's voice on these issues, and that for decades we heard Louisa's voice on this issue.
See, we're piling up now with very good questions here on Facebook Live. Thank you for sending them in, folks, but I don't want to quite let go of the Louisa thing yet. So another aspect of her story that's interesting to me is the generational shift in opportunities for women. So Louisa grew up poor, six kids, worked in a sweatshop, as I said. She had a very working class experience, did not have elite education or I don't believe college or anything like that. Her perspective was very much of people who voted Democratic from that first and second generation of immigrants from Europe, Italian-American immigrants to Worcester Square in the early to mid 20th century. Her own daughter got opportunities she would never have, which I know she was proud of. Her daughter went to Columbia. I believe she also got a master's in international relations, ended up being in Washington, raising money for candidates around the country, chief of staff to a U.S. senator, becomes a congresswoman now for 27 years. And, you know, they sort of were affiliated with different generations of the Democratic Party. So the generation that I think Louisa represented abandoned, not Louisa herself, the Democratic Party starting in 1980 and became Reagan Democrats. Remember Ronald Reagan came to New Haven in 1980 when he campaigned? He was making a direct pitch to Catholic, white, ethnic, so-called Democrats who shifted because of cultural issues from the wing of the Democratic Party that Rosa, a very liberal wing, was involved with, people who had maybe had more elite education. And we kind of see that playing again today. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me how those Democrats within a family, because parties, communities are families, the DeLauros are a family, how they kind of represented two strands in the Democratic Party that's always trying to, that people like Rosa's husband, Stanley Greenberg, the advisor Bill Clinton, when he came up with the Reagan Democrat strategy, try to unite.
No, I think that, you know, one of the things that that I think is one of the real challenges of this country is how you get the liberal side of the Democratic Party and then the populist folks, the working people of this country to align. And what's been very, I think, crafted in a way that really harms this country, and I think you see it in the election of Donald Trump, is that you've taken the people away who would really benefit from the liberal policies, and you've somehow convinced them that it's not in their interest. And that has been done time and time again, and that you throw this other issue of race into it, and that race has been a way to divide people in this country for eons. It started with slavery, and then it went on to the Civil War, and you constantly see it, and you saw it in this last election when people would rather vote along racial lines than to vote along policy lines that would ultimately help them. And it's disturbing, and I think it's something that will ultimately challenge our democracy.
The Stanley Greenberg, when he did the strategy for Bill Clinton in 1992 to get those voters back, credited Louisa DeLauro being his inspiration on this. He called it, "It's the economy, stupid," was the philosophy. That was the phrase that Clinton priority be. That's what we got to focus on. And I think the uniting issue he saw was to have working to middle class economic issues drive the agenda. That seeing government as a positive force to have Social Security, health care, help create employment, minimum wage, that those kind of issues are government solving issues rather than government get out of the way issues.
And somehow we lost our standing in that argument. I think it's still the same argument that if we knew how to communicate, it would outweigh some of the other negative and destructive politics that have us in a really strange position in our country.
I seem to remember Bernie Sanders saying things like that. Sorry, okay. Okay, let's move on to it. I have to get my cheap shot in. Anthony Bernard Ellison Jr. has a question in for you on Facebook. Thanks, everybody, for all these questions. Mayor Harp, how will living in my hometown become more affordable from wage increases, rent to aggressive ticketing tactics by police and city parking workers, ? I work, I don't get any assistance, nor want any, but I am getting stretched thin living here. Thank you for your question, Mr. Ellison Jr.
Well, you know, I think that ultimately, one of the reasons it costs so much to live here is that our vacancy rates are so low in our city. And so, and I think as we get more and more apartments in our city, that it's going to ultimately, I believe it will make it cheaper to live here. On the parking tickets, I was just working with Doug Hosleyden, who is the Director of Transportation, Traffic, and Parking, to look at ways in which we can reduce the cost of tickets, maybe change the hours that we tag in the city. And so we're working on finding ways to make that less annoying.
And thank you very much. Robert Gibson writes in, some Board of Education members have been uncharacteristically absent for the past several Board of Ed meetings. The new appointee to the Board of Education, Jamil Cotto, has not yet been seated on the board. Several weeks have been passed since the appointment. What can be done to expedite bringing the board to its full capacity so that the work of running the school district is not impeded by the lack of a quorum? Thank you, Mr. Gibson, for that question.
Thank you very much. You know, before a person can be seated on any board or commission in our city, they have to go through an aldermanic hearing and the committee of cognizance, and that committee has to vote it out, and then it has to be voted out by the full board of alders. And so once I made the appointment, it usually takes about 3 months to get through that process. And so
can they speed it up if they want? Have they done that in the past?
They
do unanimous consent?
They can do it, but they haven't done it on board appointments. And I have complained to them about how long it takes to get things through the Board of Alders. And it takes even longer because in the summertime, they only meet, I think, in July once and in August once. And they think it's really important, and I would agree to some extent that they hear what people want to do as members of the various boards and commissions that I appoint. And so they haven't really been interested in using a different process because...
Do they actually do that at the hearings? We don't usually go to their committee hearing that does that because in our past, we never heard anyone questioned.
Oh, no, they do question.
They question. Like the automatic, when you have all, because you do a lot of appointments to like the Fair Rent Commission, yep. to the board, not just the big ones like Board of Ed and Fire, all the like 20 people a night will get questioned?
They do question them.
Well, we got to start covering those then.
And that's interesting. And they won't, if a person doesn't show up to that meeting, they won't move that person forward. So.
Well, it is an important process of Board of Legislature, and you were in the legislature to have advisory powers on when you appoint people. Is there a difference between different levels of appointment, or do you think that can be sped up somehow without unanimous consent?
I'm hoping that there's a way. I've asked them to take a look at it, and they've said that they will. So I think one of the things that we have to do, if I'm going to appoint someone, I really need to take into consideration that it does take that 3 months. The Jamil Cotto issue, he's taking over Daisy Gonzalez's position, and no one could foresee that would be necessary.
She died suddenly. Well, do you think it's possible to have someone serve on an acting basis when there's a vacancy by death?
It's not a part of the charter. So, you know, a lot of these things are governed by charter.
Okay. There was another question. I think I just lost it on Facebook. Oh, you're listening to Mayor Monday on WNHH Radio. You're home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed at 103.5, and live streamed NewHavenIndependent.org. We had three questions from Tom. He wrote in. Number one, does the mayor have any updates on the police department's investigation into the murder of 14-year-old Tyreek Keyes?
I know that they're working very hard on that, and I spoke to the chief about it. They have not any public updates, but they are working on it. They have some really very good leads.
Okay. Whether or not, does she have updates on whether or not Priscilla Knox will remain employed by the mayor's reelection campaign? That's the woman who had worked for your opponent, said she had forged documents, gave a statement to you guys, and is now working for you guys.
Yeah, she is a part of a team that works for me normally in the western part of the city. And so I haven't discussed this with the person who hired her and who leads that team. But look, she is going to be working for my campaign. She will not be collecting signatures. And I think that one of the most important things that one can do is to recognize that that system was violated. And since I don't have to collect signatures, she won't be doing that for me. If anything, all she'll be doing is urging people to go out and vote. And so I don't see a real problem with that.
And then the third question is, any inside scoop on the latest with the state budget? I just want to update people that I believe the date was on July 1st. They're supposed to have a budget, right? The state did not pass one. People are kind of freaked out, and they're still not that close, although everyone's floating compromises. There are really three parties. There's the governor, the Democrats, and the legislature, and the Republicans. The governor's latest budget does preserve 100% of New Haven's aid. He's trying to protect cities and have the deeper cuts go to wealthier suburbs, which is really not the way Connecticut used to work. And the latest estimate is that you would get 228, you get $228 million last year, and that we would get it again. Do you think the mayor's, is that, should we be counting on that? How good is it, the fact that, how good a bet is it if the governor is preserving that money when he's one of three parties' negotiations that'll end up that way?
Well, you know, hope springs eternal, but in all honesty, I think that one of the things that will likely indicate a compromise is the fact that he has done an executive order that does not fund educational cost sharing to 85 towns. And I think that's something that raises their level of concern and therefore the legislators' level of concern. So ultimately, I believe that our poorer cities will receive at least what they received last year. And, you know, frankly, that's not enough. I'm hoping that we'll look at our cities and try to find ways to stabilize them. You know, Hartford has been saying now for a number of months that if they don't get significantly more than they got last year, that they're going to, they'll become bankrupt.
All right. Well, we had Bob on the other line, but now it's ringing. Bob, are you there, sir? You know why?
Hello?
Yeah, Bob, are you? We did ask your question before. Thank you for calling in to Mayor Monday. You had asked earlier about the mayor's vision for the next 2 years. We were sad not to hear your voice with that question.
Here I am.
Do you have another question?
I was able to sneak away for a minute.
Oh, we're not going to tell
Hello,
your employer.
Mayor.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
By the way, there's been an executive order that you're allowed to take a break.
Here. Okay. But the question I actually had was, will there be a primary tomorrow in New Haven?
Well, you know, unless the SEEC, the State Election Enforcement Commission, says that there will not be, there will be. And, you know, frankly, there are automatic primaries that will not be impacted by the fact that we question whether or not 600 of those that were considered to be legal signatures are, in fact, illegal signatures.
Well, have you taken steps to try to stop the primary? Because the State Election Enforcement Commission doesn't meet until September 20th.
We haven't. We decided not to go to court on it, but just to let people know that if, in fact, they find that they were illegal signatures, that we would be in a real quandary about what to do about that. The election should not have happened.
But it is going to happen tomorrow.
But it will.
Okay, Bob, thank you very much for that.
Oh,
excellent
I have
question.
One last question.
Okay.
Have you ordered flags in the city to fly at half staff over the death of Louisa DeLauro?
You know, I don't know if we have yet. I'll check. And if we have not, then we certainly will.
Bob,
okay.
You always got some good questions
good
we hadn't thought of.
Man.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you, Bob, very much. You're listening to Mayor Monday at WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. All right, we got a few more minutes here before we let the mayor go. There was a very interesting meeting that who was it? Oh, Alan Appel was at for the Independent last week, where they had a rampage in Edgewood Skate Park. It wasn't a bad rampage.
Mm.
Rampage is the name of a company you've hired from Bridgeport that builds skate parks. And New Haven Skate Park is one of those great meeting places for people of different walks of life. It crosses racial boundaries, age boundaries, interestingly enough. The people come and do tricks on their skateboards, on their BMX bikes. They're now second-generation people. We know people who are taking their young son, their guy's taking a young son there after he had grown up at that skateboard, but it's worn out. And you guys made two decisions at the city. You decide to fix up that skateboard park and then to build a second one next to it and make it kind of state-of-the-art. The money, $150,000, I believe, is set aside in two phases. And at these meetings, it's been on me, you know, it's people who are often disconnected from government. The skateboarders, the kids, kind of they're often outsiders in society. They've been showing up to the meetings, and they had one last week, helping them plan how to do these things you and I would never think of. I forget what the words are for all their things. And they also volunteer to help you save some money by working themselves and ripping out invasive Japanese knotberry. Never heard of knotberry. From near the water so that when you're working on what was a wetland there, it's going to be in a skate park. Dave Moser from your city plan department, he's an architect, said it's the best public meeting he's ever been at for that kind of spirit. And so what are you hoping to see there with that skate park?
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that we already see is what you mentioned before, which is we have a space that attracts all age groups. The other thing that I understand is that there is some private investment that is going on in that as well, and helping to offset some of the costs. You know, I could be wrong, but that's what I understand. And so I'm really excited, one, that people care about it. You know, I honestly thought that skateboarding was passe. Although the other day when I was walking my dogs, there was a young man that came barreling down my street. So obviously it's not. I'm excited that it has that group and that they care about it and they're willing to come out and talk about what's important to them.
Joe Ugly was on the radio, was all for it, and his kid was a skateboarder. Mm-hmm. He was concerned that not that many people were black who came to the meeting, because when you go to the skate park, it really is interracial. It's like white kids are kind of outsider kids and the young adults and black skateboarders, BMX riders. And when you've had other public meetings there, like they had an art day, we had well-known graffiti artists and others paint the park along with the kids. And they did have that kind of crowd there. At these meetings, it was almost all white people. It's kind of interesting. I don't know. He thought it might be an outreach question.
It could possibly be that. But it just goes to show you that in a New Haven park where there'll be a skateboard, you're going to have all kinds of people.
Yeah. And the BMX, I'm learning about this. This is not something that is on my radar. You were last week, one issue you were dealing with was DACA. These are the dreamer kids, the kids who came to this country or were born in this country and their parents are undocumented immigrants. There are 800,000 estimated in the country. There are 10,000 in Connecticut, many in New Haven. Mm-hmm. And President Trump appeared not to be wanting to do this, but he did it anyway. He said that program's going to end, the President Obama, but he gave it 6 months, hoping that Congress will do a fix, which doesn't seem that likely. But you immediately, as soon as he announced that, you had a rally, an event at City Hall, and where you talked about how you were going to resist this order. How does one resist this order?
Well, you know, a couple of things that we've got to think about is what do we do on behalf of our young people who came here as children? If this order goes into place, then these kids are going to have a difficult time going to college. So one of the things that New Haven Promise does is not look at that. And so I'm on the Promise board. I'm going to continue to advocate that we don't take that into consideration. We as well did work when I was in the General Assembly called the Dream Act, and we made those young people eligible for in-state tuition in our state universities. And so those are the kinds of things that we've done, and I believe that I'm going to fight to make sure that we don't turn back. We did it before DACA came out with through the president's executive, President Obama's executive order. So these are young people that we have invested, many of them, at K-12 education in. They have lived here longer than they've lived in their country. Some of them don't even speak their country's language. They really have no place to go back to. And so we've got to support them in every way that we can. And if by supporting them we're sued by the federal government, then we're going to fight back.
The The one guy I met there was really remarkable. Well, the speaker that struck me the most at your press conference last week was a young man named Sergio Almedo Ramirez. I was just chatting with him before it started, and he's a DACA kid. He's a dreamer, but he's not a kid. He's in his early 20s. So he grew up in New Haven. He came from Mexico. He went to school here. He went to Hopkins School. He got a scholarship, I guess. It's an elite school. And I feel like that's harder than college. I think kids who go to Hopkins are really ready for college. And he worked at Dunkin' Donuts during high school to be able to help afford going there. First kid, obviously, his family go to college. And then he became he's working for Junta and working with other dreamers now. You talk to these people and you wonder, why would we want them out of the country? Jeff Sessions, Attorney General, said, well, they're taking everybody's jobs.
That's just ridiculous. There was a young woman, and this is what informed the way that I look at it. My husband and I used to go to a restaurant, and there was a young woman who would wait on us a lot of times, and she was a student at Wilbercross High School. And, you know, Wendell would always ask her, you know, well, how are you doing in school? And she said she works really, really hard in school. And so by the time she graduated, she was number four in her class. And this was before we'd done the DREAM Act. And so we asked her where she was going to go to college. And she said, I can't afford to go to college. And you're number four in your class. What do you mean you can't afford to go to college? Well, you know, the federal grants that everyone and the federal assistance that everyone counts on is not extended to this group, at least at that particular time. And when I think of this young lady, she was brilliant. She'd done well. She'd done everything right. And her parents brought her here from Colombia when she was 3 years old. And she did still, you know, she learned to speak Spanish in the home, but she grew up in America. She's an American citizen. And she's everything American. And why would we not? She's brilliant and can contribute to our
city. What
did
happen with her, do you know?
Actually, Rosa DeLauro helped her. Rosa DeLauro and I think Chris Dodd at the time, so it was way back, helped her become a citizen.
Oh.
And it took her maybe 4 years to become a citizen. And she was so committed to her own education that she went to Gateway. And then once she became a citizen, she was able to finish a four-year college. I think the last time I saw her, she went on to get a master's degree. I believe she's an educator.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And sounds like Wendell, the kind of question he would ask at dinner. Anything update on the Trinity Bar fire? Did we ever get a, 2 weeks ago, there was a big fire at Trinity Bar and restaurant, and the restaurants above, the apartments above. And it sounded, do we know where that guy died? The guy who had 70%?
You know, I think he's still alive. I haven't heard that he died.
That was touch and go. And
yeah.
It sounded like it started in his apartment. There was some kind of tank there with some kind of gas or something that exploded.
Yeah, he was another person who was doing some form of experimentation. We've got a lot of people in our town that are trying to make electricity. I don't, that's what I heard. I don't know. You know?
It's kind of interesting. I think there's more to this story.
Yeah.
And there's a sickle cell. Oh, there was closer to free bike ride. And
right.
That's where a lot of people come from all over. I guess is it for just cancer research in general? They ride their bikes for the
and cancer research and all of the money that the riders donate to ride and that they raise goes directly to cancer research and to some patient care. I was out there at.
Oh, you were?
Yes, at 7:15
on Saturday.
On Saturday with my cowbell, little red one. There are over 1,700 riders. It's amazing, yes.
Wow, that's great.
It's great.
And there are going to be more bikes this weekend all over downtown. We got the Grand Prix.
The Grand Prix, yeah.
That's a bike race's second or third, I think third year we have it in town now.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, you know, it's going to bring thousands of people into our city. It enlivens our city. It's a lot of fun to watch. And so come on down to the Green.
Do we still do a pizza thing with that?
I believe we do, yeah.
Okay, so that we're going to have. So if you wonder why some of those, I remember the restaurants had to get used to the idea of putting some of their tables outside.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't going to be able to park, but then they were able to get new customers that way.
Yeah,
got to get changed to the new, get used to the new way of doing things. Hunter for Progressive Action, you were at Seacliff Inn, was it Anthony Seacliff on in Morris Cove on Friday night. It's a big gala, 48th anniversary of Hunter, the big immigrant rights and Spanish speakers assimilation agency on Grand Avenue. Been at the forefront of the Immigrant Rights Movement along with ULA. There was a big party sold out, but there was also big news hinted at that night. The director is leaving, Sandra Trevino, after 11 years. She got an award there the night. There's a picture of you and her smiling this morning in The Independent. But they've had some inner turmoil there. there were some firings. People were protesting, and the board said there were some problems, and she is going to move on, and they're going to reexamine their direction. Any skinny on that?
You know, I all I know is that there were these difficulties, and the other thing that I think is important, Junta was in New Haven when I first came here, and you know, I remember it being over there on Howe Street. I think it was, if not in, near the People's Center. And I think it's a critically important advocacy organization on behalf of particularly Spanish-speaking people who come into our community. And so I think it's very important. They do great work. They have children's programs. They have adult education. And, you know, frankly, I've known Sandra since she came here to do her fellowship program over at Yale Child Study. She's a consummate professional, and I just wish her the best of luck. And you know, and I really hope that the organization itself maintains its broad view of what it is that it needs to do on behalf of the people it serves.
Well, what I was wondering, so this place was almost defunct 20 years ago. It had this great renaissance, and the whole community pulled together, started Norma Franceschi, Rafael Ramos, to this day runs the board, takes the kids out camping every year, all this great stuff they do. And what it originally was doing, you know, it was primed once it had this great renaissance. Kiko Matos was running it, and it got rebuilt. Was it drew in so many parts of the community, and it was in place to connect with the growing immigrant population when a lot of issues hit the fan.
Right.
So when whether it was driver's licenses for immigrants or police problems, and then connecting with police. Before we had ULA, which is more of an activist group, Unidad Acción Latina, it really was the only game in town. And what I was wondering between the lines is whether it's hard for an organization like that that does a lot of direct service, English second language classes, after school programs, and also does advocacy, systemic change in the system, and you hire a staff that's fired up to do that. And those are linked. It's hard sometimes, isn't it, when your money comes from one purpose? Like if your funding is coming to do programming and you hire someone for that, and you also, those people also obviously want to be doing protests and organizing people for change. I'm wondering if that was the tension at the heart of this.
Well, it seems like that might have been the tension from what I gather. And it's unfortunate because I think you do need both, but you probably don't need one. And I think that if the organization wants to go more in the protest mode, that then somebody, I just think they've got to really find a way to balance it. I thought that Sandra Trevino did a really good job of balancing, and I'm hoping that in the future they'll find someone who can do that as well. It's not easy.
It's a funder issue too, so I don't know if you'd agree with this. The best agency I see balancing those dual missions is Christian Community Action under Benita Grubbs.
Oh, she does a great
I mean,
job.
They house people who are homeless. They have a big food pantry. They get people clothes. And they also address the system itself. She organized Mothers for Justice, mm-hmm. along with Merrill Eaton, where the women who are on welfare with kids stay in there, then learn how to advocate for themselves and go to Hartford and locally and go to politicians like Tony Harp and tell them what they want you to do. And
no more crumbs.
I remember Natasha Ray, I met a woman there who was a welfare mom in that program, I think it was 20 years ago or 15, learned to do that. And then she got on her feet and she became an organizer with the Community Foundation. And it was one of the people doing Healthy Start for the last 15, 20 years, mm-hmm. organizing other people. And I love seeing, and my hat's always off to Benita Grubbs because she's very quiet, low ego, but that's such a hard thing to do because your money comes in for one purpose. People come in wanting two different things sometimes, and she's able quietly to do both.
Yeah, I think that she...
And I hope Hunter can too.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I think it is a good model, and maybe they'll take a look at it and be informed by it.
And we don't talk about this. We don't do campaign politics unless people call in with questions. But is anything going on in New Haven tomorrow, Tuesday? Any major events of any sort?
There's going to be a primary tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Who's running?
Well, you know, I'm running.
For mayor.
I'm running for mayor. And Marcus Pack is running against me. And we have a number of aldermanic races as well. Yeah.
More in the general. A lot of endorsements at the last minute. You got the endorsement of New Haven Register. And Haji Bey Chaboshalu, who's an independent candidate for Alder, is endorsing you today, I believe. And Ed Joyner, Carlos Torre from the school board have endorsed Marcus Pack in the last day. The independent WNHH here, 501c3 nonprofit, so we can endorse. We may not. Actually, again, start charter. It frees me up sometimes.
Yeah.
In the old days, I'd love to mouth off about who to vote for, and then I realized, who cares who I think you should vote for. But we do have a reader named Three Fifths who often makes endorsements, and he's been very consistent since we started the Independent. He always says in every race that you should vote for the Teletubbies. Remember the Teletubbies on TV? No. They were these little characters on TV.
Okay, yeah.
And when everyone would talk about politics, he says, I'm voting for the Teletubbies. So one day we're going to test whether the IRS thinks it's outside of our charter to endorse Teletubbies. But we have not endorsed Teletubbies in this race.
Okay, well, that's good.
We are urging everybody to vote from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. once on Tuesday for the race. I wish everybody good luck in the thriving democracy in New Haven.
All right.
Thank you very much, Mayor Harp. For coming
up here.
Monday is always looking forward to many more of these episodes. And we want to thank the sponsors of today's program, Bertram Moses PC and Gateway Community College, for providing financial support. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, the group that did meet Tony Harp this weekend at Tower One, Tower East.
And they're fabulous. So if you get a chance to see them, go see them.
You're not you cannot hear that music and not be happy.
You can't. Yeah.
And feel like good about people.
No, you can't.
The song comes from the CD, A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass reminding us all that we do know what it feels like to be free. We just have to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all day and all night long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.